Afternoon. It's 12:07. You're tuned to Midday Matters right here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Monday, May 13th. With me, of course, one of the usual suspects himself, Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. How you doing today, Bob?
Pretty good. Pretty nice good. To be here.
Well, glad to have you along as always. Today's program, we're talking all things education. We talked a bit about what the General Assembly addressed education-wise on last week's program, but we wanted to do a little bit more because there's always so much education news, and of course some big news outside of the General Assembly as well. We wanted to devote an entire program to this. And of course, if you want to get involved in the conversation, we'd love to have you today. Call us at 800-471-9264. Of course, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Joining us in studio today, it's Karen Francisco, back after a long absence from our program. Karen, we're very glad to have you back with us.
It's nice to be here.
Karen from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. With us in studio as well, Chris Himsel, Superintendent of Northwest Allen County Schools. Chris, we're glad to have you along as well.
Well, thank you. We're glad to be here.
And joining us by phone, you've heard him several times in the last few months with us, Kyle Stokes from the State Impact Indiana team covering education. Kyle, you're joining us from Bloomington today, I gather.
That's right. Always fun.
Always somewhere in the States. Glad you're back at the home base, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me up.
We're glad to have everybody involved here. And we were talking a bit before the show. We were going to open with all the recent troubles with ISTEP testing in schools around Indiana. Kyle, you mentioned right before we went on here, there have been signs of more trouble as schools continue to test.
Yeah, absolutely. The online status page for the testing company CTB McGraw-Hill says that there was about a 9-minute outage earlier this morning at about 10:45 up until about 11 o'clock. And that actually led IPS, Indianapolis Public Schools, to briefly suspend testing. They went so far as to put out a media release about it. And I haven't confirmed with other districts that they had this problems, but there are reports of problems on Twitter and through other sources here. It's probably another statewide glitch, and it sort of adds on top of the other problems that were experienced on Monday and Tuesday a few weeks ago when there were these massive statewide outages. And of course, that's touched off a huge discussion about what online testing means and what it is in Indiana, because this test is it touches just about everything.
It most certainly does. And Karen Francisco, I mean, when we first heard news that there were a few glitches here and there, and then suddenly the waterfall of everybody seems to have been, or most districts in the state seems to have been affected, that puts a significant causes significant questions in the minds of administrators, teachers, and parents.
Well, it does, because I mean we are talking high stakes testing. These tests are now used to track not only student performance, they determine letter grades for schools, for entire school districts. Part of the information is used in teacher evaluations. Consequently, teacher pay can be tied to that. It also is tied to, as a result of legislation that just passed, a school that earns an F based on the grade that they received through ISTEP testing and other factors. If a family lives within the boundaries of a school public school that earns an F, then they are immediately eligible to go to use a voucher at a private or parochial school. So we heaped more on ISTEP in the last session in terms of what it can mean for schools, and it truly is a high-stakes test now. It has been for a long time, but they continue to make it even more so.
Chris Himsel, how did the outage go down at Northwest Allen? I know so many schools and so many districts were affected by this. How did your teachers, your students take this?
Yeah, well, first of all, the students are very upset by it. I mean, we're dealing with 8 and 9 year olds on the youngest end. We're talking about 13 and 14 year olds on the oldest end of the spectrum. And you know, for students, they get psyched up and thinking that this is a really important test, because it is an important test. Ironically, it's not an important test for them. It's an important test for their teachers. It's an important test for their schools. And generally, especially in elementary, these are teachers that are beloved by the kids, and so they want to do well. And it was upsetting when they would get kicked off. It was more upsetting for kids who would get failed messages. They would get a failed message because it failed to upload the answers. Mm-hmm. They translated that at age 8 as meaning that they failed the test. And so it took some very careful words and help from a teacher to calm the waters. But once the frustration started, it's very difficult to know the impact in the room of knowing, was it just that one child affected, or was it the 5 or 6 sitting around them that know that their friend is having trouble, and if they're going to have troubles. I would say the most troubling thing, though, throughout the entire process is the fact that the screen reader option, which is a special education accommodation, so you don't have to have lots of adults reading tests to the special education students.
This is a feature that reads test questions, things like that, to
students.
Correct.
It's a feature that reads the questions to the students using headphones and a microphone instead of adults, which helps on manpower. But consistently, that has given wrong answers for the entire first 7 days of the process, where a student would hit answer A and the screen reader would read that they gave answer B. We have an example of an autistic child who refuses to put the headphones on because the headphones read wrong answers.
Wow.
And so that's been a struggle for, I'm sure, schools throughout the state. But it is very individually oriented. It is very personal. And how much it affects a child is a little bit dependent on their resiliency and who around them was also affected by it. So is it simply limited to those who had their tests disrupted? Or is it broader than that because you have other kids in the room who are upset knowing that their friends' tests were upset? We don't know the answer to that.
Let me add on one more complication to that, and this is, I don't know, Mr. Himsel, if you've had this as well, but what I understand and what the testing contract says is that the test may be computer administered, but it's human timed. So there's a teacher in front of the room holding a stopwatch, even though they're giving these tests on the computer, and that adds just another complicating factor on top of the accommodation issues that you mentioned, and you know, students seeing a failure message and how that affects their emotional state. There are other complications because there's so many little logistical questions that that go into making online tests like this work.
Absolutely, I think fast forwarding that, what is the biggest issues we're dealing with today? The biggest issue we're dealing with today is finding out that kids didn't finish their test, even though the CTB website says they did. And so if a kid does not come to us and report, when am I going to get to finish the test? Because I was kicked off and I'm not finished. The computer is saying they are finished, and we have completed the testing for the most part for those kids that the computer says has finished. But we're finding out, especially at the middle school level, kids coming back and reporting and asking, when are they going to get to finish the test, because they were kicked off before the end. But if they were so many questions from the end, they were reported as having completed the test.
Bob Kaler.
Well, I can't see any way that a do-over is possible. So what are some of the ideas about how to handle such a radically flawed administration of a test?
Well, I think that's the most difficult part of it. I'm not sure that the Department of Education has many options, because a lot of this is encoded. And because it's in code, I don't know if it would take legislative action to give breaks, or if the department is working with legislators to find alternative breaks? I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that CTB continually sends out messages that all the answers are recorded, everything is going just fine, and the answers are valid.
CTB is the vendor that administers the I-STEP test in Indiana.
Correct. Mm-hmm. For example, they have said that everyone with the screen reader problem have had all their answers recorded correctly. We have no way of knowing that. The children don't know if their answers were recorded correctly. We just know that children reported marking answer A, and it read back to them answer B. And for the most part, these are not kids who have a great deal of confidence going into a testing situation. And so I'm not sure that telling them that even though it's saying one thing, their answer is really being recorded correctly, is they're going to buy that. I really don't know what options are available. I'm not sure there are many options that are available.
Karen, do you have any idea whether this is something that conceivably the state could just say, this didn't happen, all the stuff predicated on the I-STEP can't happen this year, we have to, there has to be a one-year gap in the data, like a baseball season on strike?
Well, I don't know how they could do that. I mean, they truly have built so much on this foundation that I don't know what they could possibly do. I don't know how they can use these scores. It seems that they're going to be totally invalid, but this is a mess. And I keep hearing the word glitch, and I keep arguing this is not a glitch. I mean, we've had glitches for many of the past few years, but this is a meltdown. This is a disaster.
Kyle Stokes, I know you've been consistently, you and Ellie Moxley have been consistently in touch with the folks at the state level. Any talk of so far of invalidating this year's I-STEP results?
No, I don't think we're at that point either. I don't think they're at that point yet either. And it's hard to blame them. I think they're worried about where the testing contractor is with the simple administration of the test. One of the ideas I've heard floated is that they would possibly, you know, Karen mentions that these test results are linked to a lot of things, that you might take, for instance, the evaluation data might give some flexibility to use the test data a little bit less in teacher evaluations this year, kind of mark that down a little bit, that might be a possibility, or that you minimize the use of the test results in some things. But I think, you know, Karen is right to point out that there is a lot that's built on this. There are a lot of things that are just simply in state law, and there's only so much executive license that the IDOE can take in this situation to still meet their obligations under state statute to rate schools, to rate teachers, and ultimately to assess student growth. But also, at the same time, acknowledge that there are test scores that are invalid. What we've seen happen before in these types of situations, and I think it's important to point this out too. I did a story the other day about a school that's in Lafayette, in the Lafayette School Corporation, a middle school that was setting up for online testing on Monday. They were worried about beginning testing on Tuesday. What they said when ultimately it started was that they, on Tuesday, if you'll remember, testing halted at about 11 a.m. That's when, you know, the servers overloaded and everything crashed. So there are three periods that took their I-STEP tests at this middle school completely without incident. It was that fourth period where students weren't even able to log into their tests at all. So you've got a different range of concerns here. You've got students on one hand that were able to take their test completely without incident, and then you've got, you know, a situation like at this school in Lafayette where they're able to take it, but where they just simply aren't able to log in. Well, do you invalidate their test results because their login failed and they never saw a test question? That's a question that they're going to have to be answering. And then you've got a situation like what Mr. Himsel describes, where you've got students who are emotionally distraught by seeing a fail message on the screen. And I think how those results interplay with each other is a decision that they're going to have to make. And I would imagine that they probably won't invalidate. If I were to put money on it, I would say they probably are going to look at the middle school test scores and say, well, these scores can stand because they happened without incident. But I mean, that's only a guess. We'll have to see what sort of plays out here. But there's a very large range of concerns, is the point that I'm trying to make here. And it's going to make sorting through this very difficult.
Chris Hemsel.
Yeah. Two things that I'd like to add here. First of all, everything that we're talking about are adult issues. It's going to affect the evaluation scores. It's going to affect the school accountability scores. It's going to affect the district accountability scores. The original intent for ISTEP was to give us student feedback as to how well our students were progressing. We no longer use this test for that purpose. None of the information that we get back on our students actually help us determine how we need to move forward with teaching. We actually implement our own NWEA test, and we use the NWEA test to inform our teachers and our parents as to where their students stand and how much they are growing. Our third grade parents have started complaining about the amount of testing because they also have the iRead and some other things. When I mentioned to them that the only test that is within my purview to determine whether they would take it or not is the NWEA test, the specific request is, please don't stop that one. That gives me something about my child.
Mm-hmm. And what does the NWEA test for?
NWEA is back on what the old ISTEP used to be, mm-hmm. which is just measuring the child's knowledge and skills based on where they should be on the continuum against the standards. That was the original intent of ISTEP. It was never intended to judge schools or judge adults. It has evolved into judging adults and judging schools. The second point I wanted to make on this is Kyle had mentioned that some students have not had any glitches or interruptions. Other students have had all kinds of interruptions and may not have finished the test. This is going to be used to determine our growth data. The growth data currently is not based on where was the student when they started and how far did they grow. It is based on how did they compare with other students across the state. If some of those students across the state had no interruptions and other students across the state did have interruptions, this is going to be even a more invalid growth statistic than what it currently is. And I believe it's already invalid, but it's even going to become more invalid when you're comparing kids across the state, some of whom experienced interruptions, some of whom did not.
We do need to take a quick break here. We hope you'll get involved in the conversation. Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Stay with us. The show continues in just a few moments.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Robert Caro talks about the fourth volume of his biography of Lyndon Johnson, covering the years 1958 to 1964. He describes the animosity between Johnson and Robert Kennedy this way.
Did you ever see two strange dogs come into a room, and all of a sudden they growl and the hair rises on the back of the neck?
Join us
this afternoon at 1 here on WBOI.
The Jodi Arias trial gripped millions across the country. A lurid soap opera come to life that resulted in record ratings for cable channel HLN, which covered the case around the clock. I'm Neil Conan. Novelists Walter Mosley and Laura Lipman join us to talk about what's so compelling about courtroom drama. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, announcing this year's Most Improved Campaign Award recipient, GAI Consultants, and Park Center. That's what it means to live united. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.org. tech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
It's 12:26. This is Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. We're talking today about all things education. We wanted to devote an entire program to talking about recent education news, including what we heard out of the General Assembly this session, along with the headlines about ISTEP and other matters. We'd love to have you join the conversation today. Do call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. With me in studio today, it's Bob Kaler from the News Sentinel. We have Karen Francisco from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Kyle Stokes with us by phone. He's our State Impact Indiana reporter covering education, along with his teammate Ellie Moxley. And Chris Hemsel, superintendent of the Northwest Allen County Schools. We were talking in the first part of the program here about ISTEP and the recent problems students and teachers have been having with that online version of the test. We need to wrap that up in just a few minutes here. But Kyle, you were mentioning that over the break that this whole thing is in terms of rescheduling, in terms of setting up retests, things like that. It's all kind of, you use the term house of cards.
It is. I mean, and I use that term only because I think that there are so many little pieces that have to be in place. And if one of those things goes out, I mean, you're looking at a potential real disruption in testing. And I mean, the computer servers are just one of them. The computer servers at the testing company. You have districts that are setting up a bunch of temporary facilities. They're using every computer that they can find, borrowing from other buildings, trying to make all of this fit together. You've got to do this massive effort to schedule, and when you're scheduling students, do you break up your bell schedule if you're in a middle school, or how do you get students into the computer lab at what time? You have to log every student in with individual ID codes. I mean, there's a lot of logistics that goes into this, and what it all boils down to is what I mentioned, the middle school in Lafayette before the break, and what the administrator there told me was that paper and pencil was easy. We could do it in 2 days, and I think there's this understanding with online ISTEP that we're somehow moving into the future, and that there's this that it is somehow easier because computers make our lives easier. Well, it isn't necessarily that way. It's a lot of, and there are benefits. I don't want to bowl over that too. You get in immediate feedback. Schools get quicker results. There are benefits to that as well, and the potential for computer adaptive assessments is what people like the U.S. Secretary of Education say we're on that track. But it is a lot of logistics, and just one problem can send the whole plan unraveling.
And Chris Hemsel, I mean, I know you've been seeing this at the ground level at Northwest Allen.
If they had not added more days to this week, we would not have been able to complete the testing given the glitches and the disruptions that occurred. There's an assumption by some that we have one-to-one computing at all schools for all students across the state, and that's not true. Because of property tax caps, we're rather behind on technology. Our bandwidth would not be able to handle getting to a one-to-one. So therefore, it's a matter of scheduling labs, and then what ends up happening is coursework that is designed around the computer lab, such as Project Lead the Way and some other kinds of things, Project Lead the Way being a pre-engineering program, can no longer access the computer labs because you need the computer labs to do the computerized testing. And then because of the delay, it's sending us back in terms of our end of course assessments at the high school and delaying those. And it's also causing a bottleneck with the NWEA testing. So what it's done is it has, as Kyle used the term, house of cards. Everything was built to work perfectly, and then it didn't work perfectly. So we've had to make readjustments, and thankfully, we're blessed with a lot of great people and great students and great families with patience. And our teachers have done a wonderful job in dealing with that. Our administrators have done a wonderful job in rescheduling. but we're fortunate that we have great people, or it may not have went as well.
So at this time, do you expect all of your students to finish the test within the window that's been extended here?
I believe we can finish by the end of this week, as long as the kids who did not finish are forthcoming and letting us know, since the vendor is telling us that they do have completed test.
All right. We need to switch topics here, and of course we want you to join the conversation. If you have questions or comments about any of the topics we're discussing on this program today, call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We want to chat a little bit about the Common Core. This was an issue that didn't seem like it was on many folks' radars going into the 2013 legislative session, but Karen Francisco, it turned into a much bigger issue. And before we kind of get into that, can you tell us a little bit more about just what the Common Core is?
Well, the Common Core state standards are a set of academic standards. These are essentially material that has been determined that all students should have as part of their school instruction. There's been a push for a long time, because we're comparing students not just within the state, but state to state. We're determining whether, you know, graduation rates and everything. They've been sort of an apples to oranges comparison, and so there's been sort of a push to have a certain set of standards that, across the board, when you say students in Oklahoma did this, then we're talking about the same thing.
You're able to compare students from state to state, at least among the states.
As it was, every state had its own set of standards. And Indiana actually had what were considered some very strong academic standards. They'd worked with a group called Achieve to develop these standards and had won some acclaim for the rigor of the academic standards. But this push has come. A lot of people believe now it started with the Obama administration. The Obama administration certainly supports the Common Core state standards, but this actually started with the National Governors Association. And that's where much of the steam behind it came. I believe it's 46 states have adopted the standards. I may be wrong on that, but quite a few. Indiana was one of the early adopters. Former State Superintendent Tony Bennett was sort of a leader in efforts to then develop an assessment. A group called PARC is developing the tests that will go along with the standards. But there always has been a real strong philosophical objection to having national standards. People want local control of schools, and there are a lot of concerns that some nameless, faceless group is going to tell us what our students should know. And under the surface, there was long. I had conversations with former Congressman Mark Souter about this years ago. He had very strong objection to essentially a national standards, in terms that they would then become a national curriculum. And this opposition in Indiana, it was actually in previous sessions. A couple of mothers, actually, in Hamilton County, became concerned. They were at a parochial school and became concerned about instruction. And so they've been working on this Common Core pause for some time, and it picked up steam this year.
And Kyle Stokes, let me bring you back into the conversation here. I believe it is 46 states and the District of Columbia have all adopted these standards. Can you give us a timeline on how this latest kerfuffle, let's call it, down in the General Assembly developed this session?
Yeah, it started in some ways last year when we first saw kind of movement on this front. There was Common Core legislation introduced. It didn't really go anywhere in the after the Senate. This year, it was reintroduced, and it got through the Senate committee that was it's charged with education issues, and it got through the Senate. But after that point, it died, like everyone assumed it would at the very beginning of the session, because House Education Committee Chairman Bob Boehning has said he supports the standards and basically has said he won't entertain the thought of getting rid of the Common Core in Indiana. So what ended up happening was the author of the Common Core pause bill basically tried to pull an end around and attached the language of the Common Core pause bill into another huge piece of education legislation, which includes other big things as well, which we might need a whole other show to get to. But basically rewriting the state's A through F letter grading system, you kind of had a cobbling together of different interests and different pet projects that people wanted done. In this way, they found a way, Common Core opponents did, to kind of get around the objections of people like Bob Boehning, who say this has been decided already. The legislature should not be involved in setting state standards, and the objections of interests like the Indiana Chamber of Commerce and other kind of quote unquote reform minded education organizations that supported the Common Core because they simply felt that it was good to have nationally comparable data, that you had these students that were that basically will bring students up to a higher level and get them ready for college and careers. So, that argument didn't win out. I think the argument was, let's pause, let's take another look, and that was the argument that ultimately carried the day with this bill passing on the final day of the session.
Bob Kaler.
So do you think the critical objections or the most pertinent objections to Common Core revolve around the contents of the standards or just the fact that it is a national standard that we're signing on to?
There are a couple of different things, and as my colleague Ellie Moxley has pointed out in her reporting, there are a couple of different ways to come at it ideologically. The people who tend to come at it from the left see it as an expansion of standardized testing, a continued endorsement of standardized testing, when new standards should be moving us out of that direction and moving us away from emphasizing testing and making the standards into not just the minimum baseline that we want students to know, but making the standards an end-all be-all. That's kind of one way of coming at it, but yes, there is an element as well, and you know, we've got Tea Party groups and kind of more right-leaning organizations that do see this as federal intrusion, and even Common Core proponents will tell you that they see the Obama administration's kind of tacit endorsement of the standards and their utilization of language in things like No Child Left Behind waivers and things like this by basically saying we need states to set standards that will have students ready for quote college and careers. Well, that implies the Common Core, or at least it did at the time that all of this federal grant money was made available for this. So you've got, yes, you've got some federal intrusion, but you've also got people who fear this as a continued endorsement of standardized testing as well.
Chris Himsel, you're superintendent of Northwest Allen Schools. What's your take on this?
Our take throughout the entire debate has been that there's been a lot of time devoted into it. I mean, our state did adopt it back in 2010. And because of that, we've been expected to be working towards implementing this for the past 3 years in preparation for new testing in 14-15 that'll be based on these Common Core standards. So from that standpoint, as educators, we just want a decision made. Our position at Northwest has been it really doesn't matter what our state standards are. If we go back and adopt the old state standards, we will take a look at the Common Core and we will take those that we think better prepare our kids to be successful, and we'll take those few things and add them and in make our other standards more in-depth. Likewise, if the Common Core is the standard that the state decides on, we will go back to the old standards and we will keep those from the old standards that we think will help our kids progress. We're talking about minimum standards. These are the minimum standards to be able to earn a general diploma. Our goal is not to have kids earn general diplomas. Our goal is to have kids earn Core 40 and academic honors diploma so that when they graduate from high school, they have many doors at which they can choose. We want them to have lots of options. We don't want them to have very limited options. And a general diploma is a very limiting option, whereas the Core 40 and the academic honors diploma is a much bigger in terms of the number of options that are available to our kids.
We have to go to a break in just a few moments here. First, though, let's take a call. And, of course, if you want to get in touch with us, call us at 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to Daniel. Daniel, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Yes, good afternoon. And actually, the last comment may have addressed my question. The question is, might it be possible to have a Common Core, but then also have additional levels of instruction that improve critical thinking skills and develop the ability to logically and rationally examine those things that are said to be knowledge today, because today's knowledge was not yesterday's knowledge, and today's knowledge may not be what we think to be knowledge and the truth in the future. So I had the experience of really trusting what was said to be fact in lower grades, but when I got to college, I realized just how diverse perspectives can be, and all those perspectives are trying to approach what is true and good. So, yeah, that's the question.
Great question, Daniel. Thank you. And Chris Hemsel, you spoke to that a little bit. Talk a little bit more, though, because as you mentioned, these are minimum standards schools can choose to raise the bar, as it were.
Yeah, back in the mid-90s is when the state actually took over the curriculum and adopted state standards that all schools were to adopt. However, the door was always left open that local school districts can incorporate additional standards on top of those bare minimum standards. And so regardless of what the bare minimum standards are that the state would adopt, our position would be that we're going to take a look at all the standards, whether it's the Common Core, whether it's the state standards, whether it's the standards from the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics or the National Council of Teachers of English. We will take a look at all of those and make sure that we are preparing our students to be competitive in today's world after graduation.
Daniel, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much. We do need to take a quick break for the news. We hope you'll get in touch with us for this conversation on education. Call us at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Stay with us. Back in 4 minutes.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOI News. The developer of a proposed wind farm is increasing the number of turbines it wants to install as part of a $336 million complex in Wells County. Apex Wind Energy of Charlottesville, Virginia, will present its new design to local officials next month. The company says it expects construction to begin on about 37,000 acres by the end of the year. The Journal Gazette reports the design is a change from the 87 turbines on 18,500 acres that Apex initially proposed. Apex says it won't increase its investment because the 200 megawatt farm will still produce the same amount of energy. The company overcame opposition from residents by agreeing to higher standards for noise and increasing setbacks for homes that are not participating. Indiana Governor Mike Pence signed several bills into law this weekend, but not one to expand mass transit in central Indiana. Lawmakers decided to send that proposal to a summer study committee for further review. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Sam Clement reports on what one national transportation leader thinks of the issue.
United States Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood spends quite a bit of time in Indianapolis. One of his children lives in the Circle City, and he says he has an understanding of what the community wants for transit.
We know that in every community the size of Indianapolis, that people are tired of congestion, they're tired of being in their cars and being in congestion.
LaHood was in Indianapolis for the opening of the Cultural Trail. The avid bike rider says he always favors giving residents more transportation options.
A good, strong mass transportation system enhances the overall transportation program and gives people options and gives people an opportunity to get out of their cars and gives people that sometimes can't afford a car, can't afford car insurance, can't afford a gallon of gasoline. A mode of transportation that's very affordable.
LaHood won't say whether he supports the proposed $1.3 billion system in and around Indianapolis. He says his department will listen to and try to assist with ideas the state brings forward. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Sam Clement.
Indiana school districts that won voters' approval last week for tax increases to boost school funding may be growing more skilled at selling the public on the need for that money. Five of the seven referendums on Tuesday's local ballots won voter approval, and one of the two losing districts might seek a recount because its measure failed by just four votes. Indiana schools' referendum track record has improved since 2008, when state lawmakers began requiring districts to get voters' permission for tax increases for school construction projects or just to shore up their general funds. From November 2008 to November 2010, only 40% of those requests succeeded. But since May 2011, voters had endorsed 64% of tax increase requests. The Fort Wayne Tin Caps are on a 5-game win streak. WBOY's Doug Gruber has the weekend's wrap-up.
Friday night, the Tin Caps finished a 3-game sweep of the Great Lake Loons with a 6-2 win. Defiance, Ohio's Justin Hancock shut out the Loons through 7 innings for his second win of the season. Fort Wayne then traveled to Dayton for a 3-game series against the Dragons. Saturday night, Tin Caps starting pitcher Zach Eflin earned his first professional win as the Tin Caps held off the Dragons 5-3. Then Sunday afternoon, they stretched their win streak to 5, the longest of the season, with catcher Rodney Dow going 4-for-4 with 2 home runs and powering the Tin Caps to a 13-7 win over the Dragons. That series finishes tonight in Dayton. Then the Tin Caps return to Parkview Field tomorrow night, starting a 3-game series against the Bowling Green Hot Rods at 7:05. For WBOY News, I'm Doug Gruber.
You're listening to 89.1 FM, WBOY Fort Wayne. And now back to Midday Matters.
It's 13 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Monday, May 13th. We're talking all things education on this edition of our program, and we hope to hear from you. Call us at 800-471-9264 if you have a question or comment for our panelists this hour. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's @MiddayMatters. With me in studio for the rest of this hour, Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. We have Karen Francisco from the Journal Gazette and Chris Himsell. He's superintendent of the Northwest Allen County Schools. And of course, with us by phone, Kyle Stokes from our State Impact Indiana team covering education. We've talked a lot about standards and standardized testing this hour. We did want to touch on before we have to go the new school funding formula. This session, the General Assembly decided to give a little bit of money back, 2%, I believe, this year, 2% next year. And many legislative leaders say that this replaces the money that was taken away during the Daniels administration. Kyle Stokes, tell us a little bit more about how it developed, briefly anyway, during this legislative session.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the things, I think, at the beginning of the session, the discussion was whether or not we do more full funding for education or do the tax cut. And I think that it was sort of one of the things that was posed by especially House GOP leadership as one of the either-ors when it came to the Pence tax cut. What ultimately came to pass was that there was a sort of a little bit less deep of a tax cut that was passed in the end. But the House GOP would also say that they probably got some of their funding priorities set in terms of replacing, they would say, some of the funding to Indiana schools. The funding debate also kind of touched on some other issues that were going through the legislature at this time as well. I mean, we talk about voucher expansion in a bit here. I mean, voucher expansion, the main fear was that if we expand vouchers to a huge extent, if we allow more people into this program, then we do cut into the bottom line of the biggest budget line for Indiana, and that is general funding for public schools across the state. And so I think that in many ways the school funding, as it does in a lot of times in a budget session, but I think there was definitely a trade-off, and those trade-offs of the funding levels for Indiana schools were definitely front and center in this legislative session.
Karen Francisco, of course, a lot of folks who weren't satisfied with this number in the General Assembly cited inflation. There were a lot of inflationary pressures here. There were, the schools, they say, missed out on a lot of money because there wasn't money there for several years.
Well, it's true. I've seen some figures that argue that this budget provides the smallest, the most anemic tuition support that we've seen outside of the two budget years from in the midst of the Great Recession. Before, from 1999 until the Great Recession started, we had increases in school funding of 2.4% to 4.7%, and this is 2%. The first year, 1%, the second year. And the very important thing to remember here is that these are statewide averages. These are not, every single school is not going to get that amount. And mm-hmm. I think Superintendent Hemsel can speak to that in terms of how it's affecting his district. But I think the congratulations that the legislature has been patting itself on the back, I think we're going to see some effects from that very quickly.
Chris Hemsel, can you pick it up from there? I mean, how does Northwest Allen look at these funding increases? Is it welcome? Is it enough? Is it not enough?
Well, first of all, we're always appreciative of whatever we can receive. We're going to put it to good use. We're going to make sure that we do things that are good for kids. But in terms of the reality, we've been about 15 to 20% below the state average in per student funding for the last several years, and our 2015 per student funding will finally get back to our 2009 per student funding. And that's in actual dollars. That does not include any of the inflationary increases that occurred in those 6 years in between.
Bob Kaler.
Do you have a good read yet on how much more money will be coming into the school district with under the new funding formula?
Yeah, we have a basic idea from the information that our state legislators have received, and it's definitely an increase that is significant for us. It's probably not going to allow us to restore the full pay cut that our staff took. It is not going to allow us to restore any of the positions that were cut back in 2010 in response to the original budget cuts. It will allow us to keep up with our current growth, so that if we grow by another 100 to 150 students, as we have been growing, we will probably be able to add a proportionate number of teachers to keep pace. But in terms of restoring what we had lost from the budget cuts before, it does not put us there, especially when we also have to implement the new health care law from the federal government.
Well, that touches on something else I was interested in. First, about what percentage is that increase going to be?
In ours, it's around 2.5% for the first year, and it's about 0.75% to 1% in the second year. The second year is the year that we will fall further behind inflationary rates if the economists' predictions on inflation come true.
So what are you anticipating the impact of the Affordable Care Act will be?
We are anticipating our costs to go up somewhere between $600,000 and $800,000, which will eat into a significant portion of the increased funding that we have, but obviously not all of it.
Is that because you will have to insure more people or, mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah, we will have more people who are currently classified as part-time but not eligible for benefits will become eligible for benefits. That is true of all employers all across the nation. That's true of schools, just like it is with private businesses. We follow by the same rules, and we will have to come into line as well.
And then what do you expect to lose in funding through the impact of sequestration?
That I don't know the answer to, simply because we have so little impact from the federal government. Our Title I budget is about 5% of what Fort Wayne Community Schools' Title I budget is. Our special education budget will be a little bit more protected than what Title I and some of the other title grants will be because of the federal mandates on providing the services for those students. So we receive so little from the federal government that it's really not an issue. It's not an issue for us.
Okay.
Karen Francisco, I know you wanted to jump in there
briefly.
Yeah,
on the Affordable Care Act issue, that's one. It seems that schools and universities in particular, they have a lot of employees who are working about 30 hours a week, and they work during the school year. They're often, and we're talking about cafeteria workers, classroom aides. The healthcare law requires that 30 hours a week you qualify for health care, and universities and schools are faced with this issue of they're going to have to offer health coverage to people that formerly were not eligible, and it's a huge issue, and it's one that didn't get any attention in terms of this funding discussion.
And certainly a lot of businesses have raised the same flag as well. That's another program, however.
Yeah.
We only have 4 minutes left in this show. We did have an email here from Casey. Casey says, in regards, I believe, to the testing problems, this sounds completely ridiculous. As a person with a learning disability and a licensed psychologist in the state of Indiana, this situation is a mess. Licensing boards, many other high-stakes tests are, and many other high-stakes tests are administered on computers in very standardized ways that increased test validity. Haphazard manner that this test seems to have been administered for whatever reason would seem to call validity into question. On what possible basis could these results be considered valid? And as the parent of a child in Fort Wayne Public Schools, I'm very concerned if invalid test scores may be used to make decisions for either my child or the professionals responsible for this instruction. On face, the administration of the test seems to call into question validity in some very serious ways. And Chris Himsel, I imagine not only administrators and not only teachers have been raising this issue, I'm sure parents are concerned as well.
Absolutely. They are very concerned. However, I would come back to, ironically, of all the things that we're talking about, the people who are least impacted by the results are the students themselves. And so it is the adults who work with the students who are at the high stakes nature. The students themselves and the parents will actually receive very little information regarding their child's performance from the test, because that's just what it's evolved into.
Kyle Stokes, we only have a few minutes left in the show here. Let's going back to the ISTEP news here briefly. Any indication from the state on what kind of timeline they're looking at in terms of making a determination about the validity of the scores going forward?
No, and I think that the only date that we have right now is May 17th. By the end of this week, testing has to be completed, and I think that we're just sort of living for that date, although, you know, it's altogether possible that today's interruption may prompt another extension of that timeline here. We usually don't see results like things for A through F ratings or something like that until later in the summer, into the beginning of the school year almost, is possible. But it's possible, it's plausible that it won't be set until then, but there are a lot, again, it's a lot of moving pieces that are attached to this. So they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do about the validity of these exams, especially when you're talking about districts that are setting teacher pay based on this. It's all very complicated, but the thing that they have that we don't necessarily have is access to a lot more of the real-time data. And as Mr. Himsel points out, we've got a lot of students who are, you know, potentially have problems with their exams. Perhaps the data is problematic, and I think that what the department is going to have to do is go through that data, figure out which exams are valid, which ones are not, and when that all gets done probably depends on the extent of the problem. If you have, as I mentioned before, if you have students who are getting through their tests no problem, if you have students who are just it was an issue that they couldn't log into the test in the first place, then that might minimize the issue if that's the majority of what we're talking about. But if we have a lot of students who had significant disruptions, this could be a big issue.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there for now. Thanks very much to Karen Francisco of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, to Chris Himsel from Northwest Allen County Schools, Kyle Stokes from our State Impact Indiana team, and Bob Kaler from the News Sentinel. I'm Sean Beter. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOY Fort Wayne. It's 1 o'clock.